This episode is brought to you by Castwave Studios and Amazon. Go to www.castwavestudios.com and click the Amazon tab and search for everything from iPads to streaming video to Surge. So tasty. It doesn't cost you a thing and help keeps the studio producing free content. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the Amazon tab today.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, we discuss the new Ghostbusters, and Sony seemingly trying to mimic the Marvel method of filmmaking. Also, Leonard Nimoy, Kingsman, Jeremy Clarkson suspension, and Power / Rangers? I'm Colin Kakamas, and you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we're boldly going nowhere. I'm joined by Jordan Hazelwood and Brian Massey.
Well, hello. Howdy.
Tonight, we got a little bit of nerd news to talk about.
Yeah.
Bunch of different topics. A lot of stuff has been going down recently. First up on the docket, Sony, even though they've already announced that they're going to do a all-female iteration of the Ghostbusters... Mm-hmm. have now apparently stated that they're now going to do an all-male iteration of the Ghostbusters.
Okay, so the Rule 63 thing was weird enough, but a re-Rule 63?
Yeah, it's a little odd, isn't it?
Rule 36, if you will? Like, that's a step too far.
I know, it's confusing. I mean, there's been virtually no details on this. I mean, aside from Channing Tatum is...
Yeah.
Earmarked like, as one of the possibilities?
I think it was Channing Tatum and Chris Pine.
You mean Chris Pratt?
Captain
Kirk. Wait, are you talking about Captain Kirk or Star-Lord?
I'm talking about Captain Kirk, but that was a completely different announcement. I'm mixing the two together. No, you're right. Mm-hmm. It's Chris Pratt.
Okay, that's what I thought. Right. Okay.
He was announced for something completely different today.
I think Chris Pratt that kind of deserves the right to be in everything. Like Helen Hunt was that one year.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah, I won't
argue with that.
I remember that. That was a little interesting, to say the least.
The Year of the Hunt. and of course, the movie that gave her that right was Twister, which, looking back on it, really wasn't worth the effort.
No.
Anyway.
But, yeah,
okay,
so...
Okay, so you mentioned before, Colin, that Sony plans on, like, at least a trilogy of Ghostbusters films, and, like... different teams of Ghostbusters who will have their big team up moment in the final movie.
Mm-hmm. That's so the idea. I mean, that's what's being hinted at. There's no official announcement from Sony, but it seems like that could really only be the option, considering they're releasing same company is releasing two versions of the same franchise.
You know, as much as I like my PlayStation, I feel like Sony hasn't really deserved to take a second crack at making movies the Marvel Studios way after their first attempt kind of fell through the boards.
Yeah. Also, at this point, if you're planning on doing something with that kind of, you know, scope, why not just do something about, like, I don't know, you know, there's all this lore about, you know, like the Chicago Ghostbusters. Like, why does it have to be, you know, just strictly like, oh, well, this is the female team and here's the male team. Do something where it's like, oh, they've been franchised all around the United States, and then they have to team up because something crazy happens. I don't know.
Well, if memory serves correctly, that was the plot of the video game, wasn't it?
No, not necessarily the plot.
I take that back. I'm sorry. That was supposed to be the plot of the supposed original third film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the video game was basically the video game felt like Ghostbusters 3 in as much as... as much as the plot was, let's stop Ivor Shandar from from resurrecting the Destructor and destroying the world again, like he tried in the first movie. Because that seems to be the rule of trilogies. The third movie always has to have roughly the same plot as the first movie.
Yeah.
I think we've covered this ground before.
Well,
no, the League of Shadows is out to destroy Gotham. Again. Oh no, there's another Death Star. Again.
Yeah, I mean, here's my biggest issue with this supposed diametric way of thinking. I don't necessarily mind the fact... I mean, now I've sort of swung around... Because I remember when this first broke that they were going to make... they were rebooting Ghostbusters, effectively. I wasn't happy about it. Not necessarily because it was going to be female-centric.
No, not at all.
Is that what... Ghostbusters is just a franchise that really didn't need to be rebooted.
Yeah. It was kind of like Back to the Future.
Yeah, I was gonna say, were people screaming for a Ghostbusters reboot?
I wasn't.
I mean, people. I don't remember people really screaming for a RoboCop reboot. We still got that. And it sucked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and of course, Chappie came out last weekend at the time of recording, and man, it's not been a good couple of years for RoboCops. Let me just say that much right now.
Was that not good?
No.
And I heard such good things. Apparently, before it actually came out.
No, we're rambling a bit. I'm sorry, Colin.
No, that's all right. My thing about it was just like Ghostbusters. Like Hollywood is just seemingly run out of ideas, so they're just basically repumping franchises that really don't need to be rebooted out.
No, that's not what's going on. Hollywood is trying to bank on relatable and familiar franchises, and they're trying to make a quick buck. They're not willing to bet on an original idea. They'd much rather put money towards let's see if this sticks to the wall a third time or a second time or whatever.
I mean, but here's
that's the way it seems anyways.
That was my original sense of thinking, but since the female-centric film, it's sort of taking along the same lines as the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
They've hired mostly comedians to play the four main roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It is a comedy.
I know, but here's the thing. The second one, which is the male-centric one, it's only really announced one definitive actor, Channing Tatum. And Channing Tatum's, I know...
He's actually been in some good comedies.
Well, I mean, I know he was in Magic Mike. I know he was in 21 Jump Street. 22 Jump Street.
Yeah.
But usually...
My name is Jeff.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, usually the comedic balance is on the other actor.
Yeah.
I mean, he has funny moments.
He's usually the straight man. And exactly. The straight man, goofy guy dynamic, so...
I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, who's he going to be playing the straight man to? Because the straight man in the original Ghostbusters franchise was Harold Ramis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't see Channing Tatum as Harold Ramis in this movie.
I mean...
I don't see Channing Tatum collecting spores and funguses.
I know, right?
And molds. Yeah.
Spores, molds, and fungus,
I mean, I don't think anybody could really fill that role, don't you?
No one could, really.
Yeah.
Maybe... Okay, I'm sorry. If we were to take... I remember discussing this, who would be my choice of... Who would be my choice for, actors now, if they decided to reboot that team. I honestly, when I first... I've forgotten the team at this point. I know, I think I said Stephen Colbert was the one I would replace as
Okay, you know what? I'm down with that. What about Bill Hader?
Napoleon Dynamite?
No. You're thinking that's John Heder.
No, I'm talking Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
The guy who plays Stefan.
And he's also Dr. Malocchio on the Awesomes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. So people heard that. Heard that show. Cool.
Oh yeah, love that show.
Great show.
No, but I mean, the thing is that I feel if you're gonna do the same thing, you really need to have comedians playing those roles. Now, to be fair, Chris Pratt gained prominence being a comedic actor on Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I could buy him doing it because he does action and he does
comedy. Funny as hell in the Lego movie.
Exactly.
Also, he's Star-Lord, yes.
Right, so he can do the action, he can do the comedy. We know that much. I'm not necessarily sold on Channing Tatum, but
if he's one out of four, I mean, you could have a mesh of personalities there.
Yeah.
The part of this announcement I'm dwelling on is that, do you remember how gauche it was in years past when a movie would come out and they say, check out this movie, we're definitely making a sequel. or Van Helsing is totally going to be at least a trilogy, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was my other biggest fear.
And that's only gotten worse. Like, as much as I love the Marvel Studios output, it seems like every major movie announcement is usually like a reboot or rebranding of something that's already been proven. And check it, there's going to be like five of these, so
yeah.
you know, get hyped now.
Well, I mean, yeah. And the thing is that if any single one of those films fails, it could derail the whole thing.
Like, I don't see Frankenstein Untold tromping into theaters in the.
No. I don't see Sucker Punch 2.
Yeah.
Wait, was there actually supposed to be a Sucker Punch sequel? I don't remember that.
Let me put it this way: there was a 300 sequel. I don't put it past. I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just saying, I don't put it past them.
Wasn't A-Team supposed to be a trilogy?
Yep. There was supposed to be an A-Team 2. Didn't happen. I know Joe... I mean, that's the thing. Joe Carnahan's not doing anything. It's not like he couldn't do it. It's just... No one really... I mean, the first movie was okay.
I guess that plan never really came together.
It was... I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. The movie was okay.
Thank you. I'm good. that was rather nice, Brian. Thank you. That's the one thing I still remember about the A-Team movie. God, why am I talking about the A-Team movie now? But I love the fact that I barely remember a single episode of that show, and yet the script was like half catchphrases.
Yep.
That I was somehow, you know, acutely aware of.
Yeah, it's basically just Liam Neeson grumbling for having a.
I ain't getting on no plane.
You know, and then, you know, that...
Drinking milk.
That UFC fighter just...
He had the words pity and fool tattooed on his knuckles.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
I love how Mr. T refused to even cameo in that movie. Because he was just like, it's too violent.
As Quentin Jackson's father or something, right?
Yeah.
It's humorous. I'm just saying.
It's just like, yeah, all these movies are like, yeah, we're the start of a pentology, and like, no, you're not. Stop saying that.
I mean, that's my thing. It's like, I don't think...
Even talk is not supposed to be this cheap, guys.
I know. The problem is, I don't think the female-centric Ghostbusters is going to do bad. I think that one could actually do well.
I think that would do well. Yeah, like, I'm completely on board for that one at the moment.
I think the male-centric Ghostbusters is probably going to tank. That's just me, though, just because I don't know. I don't buy it. I just don't understand why they're doing it.
Here we got the girls. Here we got the boys. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know.
We're gonna do a female centric Ghostbusters, then a male centric Ghostbusters,
and then the Ghostbusters cotillion in which they all pair up.
And then we're gonna
do Ghostbusters co-ed.
And then we're gonna do parts 1 and 2, release them over a year apiece.
Yeah.
Damn it! You son of a bitch. There is only one upside to this male-centered Ghostbusters film.
What's that?
The Russo brothers have been attached to direct.
Okay, fair enough.
Wow, those guys, I've heard their names attached to a lot of crazy stuff these days.
Yeah, me too.
Man,
Really?
I'm trying to think what else...
I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved Winter Soldier, but...
And I'm sorry I even brought that up.
I mean, he's doing
Civil War, and they're... I know they're attached to other movies. Damn it, I'm sorry. The thing about them is that I remember shortly before Winter Soldier came out, I looked up, I didn't know who they were, I looked them up, and they're like, these guys have, like, directed sitcoms.
Yep.
Like, how were they tapped?
They did the paintball episodes of Community. So.
Yeah, I have no idea how they got tapped to helm, a major Marvel picture. And they crushed it.
I was gonna say, one of them do the original film?
I don't know.
The original film was Joe Johnston, the director of The Rocketeer.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
And The Rocketeer.
Aw. Yay! Aw.
Yay!
Yay! Alright, so, I mean, I think my verdict on this is, I mean, I'm gonna have to wait and see. Just because I'm kind of interested in seeing the female-centric Ghostbusters, but this new one...
Let me put it this way. I've seen the cast for the female Ghostbusters, and you know what? I kind of like... You know, it's a solid cast.
Yeah, I mean, we got Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, and then Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon. I mean,
how many of them were in The Bridesmaids?
Two of them.
just two? Okay.
Yeah the two, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, and then the other, I mean, but all of...
A lot of SNL veterans.
A lot of SNL ones, which is good, because that's the thing. It's like, the thing that made the first Ghostbusters great was the fact that...
It was a bunch
they
of
were comedians. They could improv. It was, that was key, because, I mean, mind you, of course, the Venkman character...
Tell them about
the Twinkie. The Venkman character was originally written for Belushi, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, Belushi.
No. Nope. Hey, do you know another movie? What other movie has a whole lot of Saturday Night Live people in it?
What?
Southland Tales.
Really?
Yep. And, you guys don't know about Southland Tales? Or?
I've heard of it.
That's a pretty infamously bad film, so let me move on. Hey, do you know what other movies have a lot of Saturday Night Live people in them?
Who?
Saturday Night Live movies.
Yeah, I'd rather watch those, to be honest.
Coneheads, Wayne's World.
Oh, Wayne's World.
Yeah, I was thinking more like, I thought you'd think of Night of the Roxbury's or It's Pat before you thought of Wayne's World. Oh. But, you
know, or
Stuart's Family.
That's fine.
I love that movie.
Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it.
People like me.
People like me.
Yep. All right, well, I mean, I don't understand why they're going at this before.
Because everybody wants to do a damn franchise. Nowadays.
I mean, no, I understand
like
why they're. I mean,
and it's kind of tiring, to be honest with you. It's like, ugh.
I mean, but yeah, but why announce it before the female-centric Ghostbusters comes out? Wouldn't it make sense to do that immediately after?
Why announce the Amazing Spider-Man 2 before Amazing Spider-Man comes out? I mean, you know, they
did they?
Yeah, they did.
I remember them. I mostly remember them announcing the Venom movie, the Sinister Six movie,
yeah,
the Black Cat movie, and the Aunt May movie.
The Aunt May.
I think it was they announced
before us.
Who weeps for the Aunt May movie? You know, like.
I mean, I think they announced the plan for Sony announced their plan for the Spider-Man universe movies directly after the first box office weekend of the first film, if memory serves correct.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, so
the lesson of the day, kids: don't count your chickens before they hatch.
That is true. I mean, to be fair, yeah. I was talking to somebody about this earlier, and I was like, I made the same sort of, you know, knee-jerk reaction when Heath Ledger was announced as the Joker in
mm-hmm.
Dark Knight,
mm-hmm.
and I had to eat my words on that, because he was actually really good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's all a matter of how it looks when we get to the theater.
Yeah, you know, once you've paid down your, you know, $10.50 and you got your popcorn.
Yeah. $10.50. You wish.
You don't pay for a lot of your own movie tickets, do you, Brian?
I actually do. So
you must go to matinees only then.
All right.
Anyway, so okay. Right. Next piece of news. On a sadder note, as most people are probably aware, we lost Leonard Nimoy.
We're all making the gestures. I know you can't see that, folks, but
visual reference in an audio podcast. Yeah. We're currently doing the Spock salute.
Hashtag live long and prosper.
He lived long and prospered.
Yeah, I mean, it was, everyone was sort of panicking when we first heard he was going to the hospital. I'm sure, like, but then, if memory serves correctly, everyone heard, like, less than a couple days later, and say, oh, he's in stable condition, he's fine.
I mean, I remember, what was it, it was on, like, that Tuesday or Wednesday that it was announced that he had been rushed because he had chest pains, and then I remember I was at work, and, like, it was that Friday, and I was looking at the TV screen, and, like, they were showing, there was no sound on there, but they were showing a lot of still images of Leonard Nimoy, and I was like, oh, no, please don't tell me. Like, you know, because there's only one reason why they would go from, like, one still image to another image of a celebrity like that. It's, oh, shit.
And that was the thing. It was a real bummer.
Yeah, no, and...
I mean, that was the... I mean, honestly, and I hate to sound like this, I honestly thought Shatner would have gone first.
Oh...
And it's not,
you know what? And actually, I can't blame you on that.
I remember when George Harrison died, everyone said, like, what, not Ringo? Fuck!
I mean, yeah, it's not that I dislike William Shatner more than I like, you know, Leonard Nimoy. It's just, honestly, just Shatner seemed like the one to go first.
Yeah, no, and...
And you can tell him that yourself when you see him at AwesomeCon. I mean, Memorial Day weekend this year, folks.
I hope that doesn't hurt my chances to get an interview with him.
I heard what you said about Leonard.
I love you, William. No, but...
Why would you say that?
No, but it's... And then, like, I remember, like, literally, like, announced... Like, after the announcement happened and they announced the funeral, and the news broke that Shatner wasn't going to go to the funeral.
And
it was like everybody was going apeshit about it. They were just like, oh, you're not going to go to Spock's funeral? What's wrong with you? He's like, I have a contractual event I have to be at.
From what I understand, he actually got there in just the nick of time. That's the that's what the report was.
Oh, really? That he actually made the funeral?
He hauled ass, got to the nearest airport, and got to L.A. because I guess it was undisclosed where his funeral was, but they're saying that he got there just in time. So
well, that's good.
You know,
he still missed Takei's wedding.
Yeah.
I mean,
if guess who else is going to be at Awesome Con? That's going to be a little awkward.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, because if memory serves correctly, I mean, yeah. I think we've heard the passages out of Takei's book. He does not like.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I mean, then again, he was at his roast.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe they've made amends? I don't know. Anyway, but I think I want to talk about our favorite Leonard Nimoy moments.
Mm.
So, Jordan, start with you. What's your favorite Leonard Nimoy moment?
I've got a couple. Well, since I'm damn skippy, I'm the only one who's going to mention this. I might as well say that back at home, I actually have on VHS cassette, I have what I believe is Leonard Nimoy's first ever acting gig, which was an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Oh, all
right. Right on.
It's an episode about World War II, and it actually stars Dean Stockwell as an army dude who's like haunted by Japanese ghosts or some such thing. Anyway, Leonard Nimoy is like literally has like one line, and he's in a group of other GIs. And I love the fact that I didn't even know he was in this, but I immediately said, "Oh my god, there's Spock!" Because Leonard Nimoy just looks so radically different from like other dudes. It's like he may as well just have the pointy ears on in that scene. It's just. Wow, he is just a striking visage, is he not?
Oh yeah.
So I still remember I wasn't even all that much of a fan of Star Trek back when I first saw this, like when I was like 14 or so. But I'm like, damn, there's Spock. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting to see that today in this TV show about the Quantum Leap guy. But anyway, so I do like that, and also anytime he was on The Simpsons.
Yep.
Or Futurama,
my work here
was fan freaking tastic. I think my favorite Leonard Nimoy moment on The Simpsons was one in which he even actually guest starred in. It was an episode where Lisa is at like a book fair and she gets all of Leonard Nimoy's books. Now, for those of you who might not be in the know, in the early 70s, Leonard Nimoy released a book known as I Am Not Spock, which was basically just him trying his best to distance himself from that typecast role and do several other things with his life, like you know, go in search of stuff and sing about hobbits
or take pictures of fat chicks,
that too. And then sometime later, I want to say it was probably the mid 80s, I'd imagine. Or maybe the early 80s when the Star Trek movies were in resurgence, he turned a corner in his life and he felt that, you know, he should embrace this, you know, this classic immortal role that he's created. So he released a book called I Am Spock. Still with me so far?
Yeah.
Well, in the Simpsons universe, it's revealed that Lisa buys all his books, and he actually wrote a third book after that called I Am Also Scotty.
I remember that.
So that might be my favorite Leonard Nimoy moment of all time.
Very good. All right, Brian, your favorite Leonard Nimoy moment.
Oh, man. You know, certainly, you know, when you go back and when you watch Classic Trek, you know, whenever his character kind of breaks... and you see the human side come out, you know, that's always great. Like, probably one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek is a Muck Time classic episode, but really, I don't know, like, and I just had it and I completely forgot about it because, it was right there on the tip of my tongue, but it was, it had to be... Whenever, I don't know, like, whenever he would show up and just like, oh, hey, look, I'm Leonard, like, for instance, one of my more recent favorite memories of him was when he was on The Big Bang Theory.
Like, oh, like he actually didn't show up on the show, but he voiced...
He voiced the doll.
There was Amigo Spock.
Yeah.
And he was just... He was talking to Jim Parsons' character.
You know, you should play with that teleporter. Oh, wait. You broke it. You know, like, and Sheldon's, like, sleeping. And he's just like, Tiny Spock, help. Like, it just... Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was cute, fun.
Yeah.
It was a cute little moment. And, but, you know, probably one of the more endearing things, you know, which... sadly was after his death, was just how much love came from people about, like, you know, Leonard and how much, like, he meant to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just an outpouring. Just an, you know, an overflowing outpouring of love for the dude.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of overwhelming because, like, you go on Facebook, like, the day of and, like the couple days afterwards, and it was just Leonard Nimoy, and, you know, it was never anything malicious. Like, nobody had a bad word to say about the guy.
I think that it was the same sort of outpouring of, you know, like, affection mm-hmm. and admirations for somebody's work we had with Robin Williams passing.
Yeah, very, very much.
That's, like, the only other one I can think of, at least in recent memory,
mm-hmm.
that was like that. For me, it really boils down to three separate moments. Mm-hmm. The first one is the realization one day while flipping through a queue mm-hmm. on Netflix, and I was just like, oh, I want to watch something. Can't find anything that I at least find interesting until I just randomly came across, I think I was starting to play Netflix Roulette, which I was just randomly letting the queue shuffle through itself, and then I hit A, and it immediately starts a film. I did that. It landed on Three Men and a Baby, right? And then you start watching the...
But wait, it gets better.
And then it's like, it says, like, right at the end of the sequence with that horrible 80s synth pop song. Boys will be boys! It's horrible. And then it says, directed by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
I was like, the fuck? Spock? What? Apparently, this is, like, one of the five films he directed. I was like, wait... What drew Spock to this film? This is like, yes, three men, a baby, a bag of cocaine. I can definitely get behind this.
And there's going to be a dead kid in a window. Oh, I'm so there.
I know. It's so weird. It's just like, what's
so weird?
Oh, man. And then we shot a Vine about that because I mentioned it to you guys. And you guys were like, what?
Yeah.
That was a good moment. The second one is anytime I pull up the Legend of Bilbo Baggins music video on YouTube, I could be in, like, the worst mood ever. I cue that up, and I'm, like, grinning from ear to ear like an idiot.
In the mists of the mountain in the land of Shire,
there's a brave little hobbit who we all admire. Yeah, but yeah. I laugh not only at the fact that, again, Spock is singing about Middle-earth. It's a nice little... weird thing there, but all
that was nerdy before nerdy was cool.
Yeah, and also, did anyone else notice like all those girls were like,
it looked like they pulled them off the set of like the Batman 66 show or something.
Either that or some go-go program. Like they were
right.
They looked like the background extras in the Nancy Sinatra video.
Oh my god!
Boom, 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 boom.
There was a song written by Lee Hazelwood. No relation.
You keep saying you've got some. I bet if you played that over the background, their dancing would. That I bet if you played that song in the background, their dancing would match it. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Probably the third one. I got to admit, I hate to admit it, just because I've seen the movie 1,000 times. The scene where Spock and Kirk have their final goodbye in Wrath of Khan. I still cry like a little bitch every time I see it. Because it's so sad.
Mm.
I was like, oh, Leonard, I love you.
I have been and always shall be your friend.
Yes. I mean, I understand. I mean, even though I know he comes back in the next film, and again, he's a fictional character.
Jim. Your name is Jim.
Yeah, but still, it was... that moment of not knowing if he's going to come back, because again, he wanted out of his contract.
Well, if the Marvel movies can have characters you know, give heroic sacrifices only to immediately pop back to life later, I guess we can give Spock one.
I think so. And you know, it's funny because a lot of people were saying, Spock, how much Spock meant, like Spock meant to them, and then there were people online who were like, he's not Spock, he's Leonard Nimoy, god damn it, you sons of bitches, Spock is a fictional character. But it's, I was very saddened by his death, but I was comforted by a statement that made more sense to me now more than ever, just due to the fact that it was Leonard Nimoy and his science fiction background. I actually posted this on Facebook. It's kind of cliche. It's a bit schmaltzy, but I'm going to go ahead and read it just because a lot of people said they actually like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let me see if I can find it. Here we go. All right. So I heard that Leonard Nimoy has passed. This saddens me because he was one of my teachers growing up. He made more than most of us believe that we could do better as society. Now that he's gone, I find myself mourning his passing, but it also reminds me of a scientific precept that I always find comforting when someone I care about has passed. And that is, the law of conservation of energy states that energy cannot be created or destroyed, but it merely only changes forms. The electric energy that keeps the heart beating and our neurons pumping can never really be lost, only moved to another place and another time. Leonard Nimoy may have passed in a physical sense, but his energy is still out there, racing through the universe. He truly, now and forever, can go where no man has gone before. We love you, Leonard. We have been and always will be your fans. Like I said, schmaltzy as hell. Mm-hmm. But I will say this much. It honestly does make me feel better that, you know, I think of, once you think about it, it, yeah. So, you know, in a physical sense, they may be, you know, not here anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, the electric energy, which, I don't know, you call a soul, you call sentience, it's still out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It gives credence to so many theories that, you know, religions may call, you know, karma, reincarnation, you know, heaven, hell, what have you. But, you know.
Wow, this got deep. Jeez.
Well, to be fair, there was an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that also talked about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I know, right?
Just so you know, I really haven't watched any of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so no, I didn't.
I don't
this
really
off.
Blame you. It's kind of kicking ass now, actually. But I actually thought of a couple more Leonard Nimoy moments.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'll make these quick. Did you guys know that the Sci-Fi Channel actually made a movie back when I was not immediately horrified at the prospect of a Sci-Fi Channel original movie?
Mm-hmm.
They made a film adaptation of Brave New World.
Okay.
And they brought in Leonard Nimoy to play the role of Mustafa Mon, who is the smilingest, most wonderful dystopian dictator of the Earth that you would ever see in fiction. Like, he honestly doesn't have the bigger role. He's mostly just kind of hanging out in his house, and the main characters call him up, and Leonard Nimoy's like, "Hey, I'm Mustafa Mon, the dictator of Earth. Are you getting enough drugs in there? That's cool." It's still a walk off role, but he makes it so warm and inviting.
Yeah.
I always liked it, and of course in the original Star Trek. How he mispronounces the word sensors. I always love that.
Sensor.
Captain, sensors indicate. That's that. And you remember the Carmen Sandiego TV show?
Oh my, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Yeah. That doo-wop band?
Yeah, with the rock, the acapella band called
Rockapella.
Oh, and, God, yeah,
and,
I remember that one.
Carmen Sandiego had some sort of feminine flying blob alien thief henchwoman named Nimoy. I had a good time discovering the inspiration for that.
Oh, one other.
And of course, well, I'll tell you what, let me go first because, you know, in every life some rain must fall, and you said that no one can think of a bad thing to say about him. Well, I have a dishonorable mention, actually. Transformers 3. Which Leonard Nimoy as Sentinel Prime, or whatever the evil leader of the Decepticons who's not Megatron for some stupid reason.
Yeah, you're right.
He says to Sam Witwicky something to the effect of, I'm merging Cybertron with Earth and erasing humanity because there are far more Cybertronians who need a place to live, and the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Fuck you, Spock. Love you.
Love you, Leonard. Alright, the only other one I can think of is, we live in Frederick, Maryland, and every year there's a film festival in which you are required to write, shoot, and edit a film all within the context of 72 hours.
Yeah.
And then, so interestingly enough, there is a group called Pecos Bill and the Wranglers.
Pecos Bill!
And they shoot great stuff. It's beautiful, it's visual, it's, you know, I'm surprised they haven't won Best Ofs all the years they've done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But here's the interesting thing. About 2 years ago, Pecos Bill was the film right, I think there were two films ahead of us. Like, the block started off, it was Pecos Bill, then another group, then us.
Yeah.
Our team. And the film starts playing, and out of freaking nowhere, like, it's some random story, and this guy calls a self-help line.
Uh-huh.
And who should answer the phone but Leonard fucking Nimoy? I was like, I literally, our friends were, we were sitting in one block, and I nudged the guy in front of me. I'm like, you are fucking kidding me. Well, might as well go home now. Damn it!
Yeah, ass, hello. Pecos Bill and the Wranglers. How can I be of assistance to you?
That must be the year I missed. I was dog sitting that night.
And like, there was one where he shot that scene, and then I think the previous year he had just been their bump at the beginning.
Yeah.
He just literally just looks at the camera and says, Pecos Bill and the Wranglers.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. I'm just like, wait, Spock?
Spock!
What are you doing, Spock? They can't let her leave me.
Yeah, we should have invited Pecos Bill to sit in on this episode.
Ah, I mean, you live and learn.
You know what we gotta do next year then, right? We gotta get William Shatner in on ours.
That just seems like a cop-out. Don't think I didn't think about that. his agency won't budge on that.
Film
we might still be able to hire, to afford Zachary Quinto.
That is true.
If he's not too busy slapping kids, I mean.
That show. What is that show?
The Slap Wednesdays on NBC.
Anyway,
third time I've mentioned that in the podcast so far.
All right. Anyway, so this leads me. All right. So now moving away from Leonard Nimoy's passing, let's move on to a subject that I know Brian Massey holds very near and dear to his heart.
Do I,
Brian Massey? I know you're a fan of the children's television franchise known as the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. As they're known here, at least in America.
I mean, if you're saying that I was a fan of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers growing up, then yes, absolutely.
Don't lie, you still are.
Well, so
for those of you who aren't, who aren't in this room, which would be all of you, Brian Massey is currently wearing a Green Ranger T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. But fortunately, you also can't see his disturbingly tiny boxer shorts he's also wearing.
I think those are shorts.
They're gym shorts.
Okay.
Because I was gonna say,
it was a sunny day, and I don't feel like wearing pants.
I mean, also, if you look, you know, around the room which we're currently sitting in, if you were here, you would see at least three morphers, a Green Ranger action figure. I know you've at least got one or two of the DVDs.
Three of them, actually.
Yep.
Yeah. There were other Rangers than the green one, right?
Yeah.
You remember Once Upon a Time?
Yep. Yep. Well, the reason I bring this up is because fairly recently there was a short film released on the internet.
The YouTubes?
Actually, not YouTube, but it was released via Vimeo,
mm-hmm.
which was called Power / Rangers. Not Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, not Power Rangers, but Power / Rangers.
Just like Face / Off and Nip / Tuck.
Precisely.
And Split / Second.
Yep.
And Hack / Slash.
Yep. Again, don't ask me to come up with reasonings behind this. I mean, this created a huge viral following on the internet within like 2 or 3 days, and then Saban had it pulled for copyright infringement. And then
because right now they're working on their own big, you know, screen version.
Well, and interestingly enough, I think fan outrage was there, and they said, you know, put it like, let us watch it. We're still going to see your movie.
Yeah.
And I think they relented and they let them put it back up.
I mean, I've looked at this from a couple different sides, and a lot of people are saying, well, this is clearly a parody. And then some other people are saying, well, this is clearly, you know, somebody wanted to do like a Dark Knight version of Power Rangers. And I'm like, okay, well, right on. I have a few things to say about this.
Okay, well, we'll go into that. I just want to talk about a few things that first I noticed. Okay?
Yeah.
Because I actually watched the film in its entirety. And I want to point out here that not a single member of any of the Power Rangers franchise is in this short film.
No.
With one exception.
Mm.
The woman who plays Rita Repulsa is the Rita Repulsa from the American version.
She did the voice, right?
No, it was her. It was her in...
Right on.
She acted in it, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that's so good,
I wasn't aware that we bothered to actually cast Rita Repulsa. We just badly dubbed over her mouth.
Maybe it was her voice. Yeah.
They ran out of Z-Ranger footage, and then they had to start shooting American footage, so they had to bring in an American version of Rita.
Yeah, I got it.
And they explained it away by saying, oh, well, she's clearly had a facelift, and yada, yada, yada. So.
Yep. All right, well, anyways. This film was interesting for a couple different reasons. One, it was viewed as a more adult take on the Power Rangers, which some people are kind of hoping that Saban's 2016 film will be similar to this, but Brian, I already know, has certain issues to take with this, and I myself was like, I mean, it's an interesting concept, but a little too dark.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
For instance, the film starts off, and you see like a POV of Kimberly running down this alien planet, like a pathway, and in the distance, you can see what is, you know, admittedly a really cool fight sequence going on between, like, a Megazord and this alien. That looked pretty badass. But the jarring thing about this is that all the other Rangers are on the same planet, and they're wildly firing in the air with, like, you know, submachine guns. Like, guns that looked like they were out of, like the assault rifle from Halo. And I'm like, why do they have machine guns?
Doesn't one of them have like a zappy pistol or something?
I mean, if memory serves correctly, and I could be wrong about this, Brian, you're the expert here. But I'm almost positive that like all of their normal, like their knives and stuff, all broke down into like laser pistols at one point or another.
They were able to assemble all their weapons into like a blaster, sure, and then they also had like they had blasters on their side, sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But they didn't have freaking like machine guns. That they were
auto.
Yeah,
yeah, they weren't going like it was just.
So that was just a little off. One issue there. Now, Brian, I need some help here.
What's up?
Some of this is bothering me, and I feel like I saw Power Rangers when I was a kid. I don't think anybody in this room didn't.
Yeah,
Jordan, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
pretty much just the first three seasons.
That's about where I dropped.
I got out about Turbo.
Okay. So, Brian, who is the Machine Empire?
The Machine Empire was Zio. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was after we dropped.
I vaguely remember them.
Yeah. I think it was about before.
That was after the command center was blown up and like, oh no, the Mighty Morphin powers are gone.
That was interesting because originally the Power Rangers are like they're masters of technology. They got all these giant stompy robots, and Rita Repulsa is a wizard.
Yeah.
So it's good technology versus evil magic. And then in Zio, it's only the Power Rangers or the magicians fighting an army of robots.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point.
Who are supposedly, even though they looked way goofier than Zed ever did, they're supposed to be more powerful than him. But whatever.
Right. Well,
that's neither here nor there.
Right. Obviously, that got to the point where I hadn't been around. So apparently this, and spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this film, I would suggest that you skip ahead.
Feel free to pause it and go watch it. It's only like 16 minutes long. Come back and then we'll, you know, continue on.
Right. So apparently this movie starts out, like Brian said, with a flashback sequence in which the original Power Rangers are running down and fighting during this giant battle, and you see the Megazord and some weird creature.
That, again, that looked really freaking cool.
Yes, it did. Then you cut to a couple of years later, and there is an interrogation scene with none other than everyone's favorite teen heartthrob, James Vanderbeek. Here's what I think is hilarious. James Vanderbeek is playing Rocky.
Yeah.
The second Red Ranger. I was like, wow, that's sad.
You might be wondering, where's Jason? Don't worry, you find out.
So anyway, apparently Rocky has defected to the Machine Empire and has become one of their enforcers. And he is, to the best of my remembrance, he is interrogating Kimberly for the location of the Green Ranger, Tommy Oliver's location, which she does not know. And apparently she's just being kept, like, he knows this, being kept there for bait.
Like, you don't torture people to find out what they know. You torture people for fun.
Yeah.
Like that guy who used to work for Pinochet told the Washington Post that not long ago.
Yeah. Mm. Well, he then goes ahead and tells, you know, describes what happens to the original members of the team. Apparently, here we are. Jason, the original Red Ranger, was murdered after marrying Kimberly a couple of hours later afterwards, apparently. Mm-hmm.
The Lancers sent their guards, huh?
Apparently, Bulk and Skull betray their location.
But Bulk and Skull are the real heroes of the story! Come on!
Apparently, they were just tired of being made fun of, Jordan. They couldn't take it.
They could at least try to ask Rick Wasserman to have a more heroic theme song.
Don't look at me, man. I just... Yep. So let's see. Zach, the Black Ranger, interestingly enough, became an insatiable action junkie.
Yeah.
Who also became a Machine Empire enthusiast and coke addict, and was assassinated.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's like I'm playing that Wolf Among Us Fables game again. It's like, all the Disney princesses became whores! except for Beauty of Beauty and the Beast fame, who works the front desk at the whorehouse.
Let's see. What else is there?
By the way, in that scene, he's like... There's like some gangbang going on while he's watching footage of himself.
He was assassinated while training after a threesome with Divatox and Scorpina.
Jesus Christ.
Let's see. Oh, and Billy Cranston, the former Blue Ranger, became an openly gay trillionaire weapons manufacturer who committed suicide.
Yeah. By the way, there are at least two headshots in this movie.
Yep.
And at that point, I'll give you my opinion later, but yeah, what the fuck?
So apparently what happens is Kimberly's like, no, and apparently James Vanderbeek is making the assumption that Tommy is hunting down all the former Rangers, and Kimberly's like, no, Tommy wouldn't do that, I haven't seen Tommy since Trini's funeral.
What's this voice?
I don't know, I can't do a female voice.
It's all good.
Anyway, but so... So Tommy's like, oh, I already know that. I'm just waiting for Tommy to show up so we can kill him. And he shows up and quickly dispatches all the guards.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Rocky. Rocky gains the upper hand. And then Kimberly, who apparently was able to get loose, just picked up a gun and shot him in the head. And Tommy's like, who are you?
Tommy's Batman?
Come on. He
may as well be.
Yeah. I mean, he literally came out of the shadows, fucked up three of them, and like went toe-to-toe with the main villain.
Where are they?
So he's like, who are you? She's like, I'm Kimberly, bro. I don't know why I'm
Really chaotic,
what will Kimberly sound like next line, folks? Call our 900 number and vote.
And he's
for
like,
Timmy Turtle, press 1. For Christopher Walken, press 2.
All right.
Oh my god.
Right, I'll go with number 2. All right. So Tommy's like, you're not Kimberly. I held her when she died. Ugh, my parents are dead. And Kimberly's like, oh, I know. I'm Rita Repulsa. And then she turns into Rita fucking Repulsa.
Boo.
And then Tommy's like... And then Tommy's like, I don't know who cancer, and pulls his sword out and like comes at her.
Peace out, I'm Batman.
Come at me, bro. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't know we were going to be talking about this, otherwise I would have watched it first.
No, the movie is...
Hella violent.
It's hella violent. It's batshit crazy.
It's, you know, it's almost as if Tarantino made a Power Rangers film.
Oh, yeah, and did you notice that, like, Balkan Skull, like, OD'd?
Yeah, what the fuck, man?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention this, Jordan. Apparently, it wasn't Tommy was hunting them down, nor was it the Machine Empire hunting them down. It was basically Rita Repulsa was, you know, basically parading around as Kimberly.
Mm-hmm.
And basically convincing them all to kill themselves.
Which, wow, yeah, that was.
I was like, that's
fucked up.
I was like, A, it's fucked up, but B, you would assume if Rita had this awesome power to manipulate them into doing this sort of thing, why the fuck didn't she use it in the original series? I assume she never really had that power.
Also, where the fuck was Zordon? Like.
Dead, I assume.
This entire film, it's like, okay, where the fuck did they get these? Like, okay,
I forgot already. Didn't he die in the movie, the one with Ivan Ooze?
No,
no, Kimberly cried on him and brought him back to life, right?
No, it was they used the power of love. It was
if it were for the Pokemon movie.
No, it's what happened was they all lost their powers. Zordon went into a coma. They went to Gaia from Captain Planet, got new powers, and then used the power of love to bring Zordon back to life.
But not before kneeing Ivan Ooze in the crotch.
Yeah, yes. Press it, you know, smashing the glass, hitting the button, which went boom, hit him, and just sent him right into a fucking meteor. Yeah,
needless to say, that's pretty much the only thing I remember from that movie.
Yeah. Other than the fact that Ivan Ooze was played by fucking Belloc. Come on, man.
I love the fact that that guy has been in, to the best of my knowledge, the guy has been in three movies. Raiders, that, and Shanghai Surprise.
No, he was in Hot Fuzz.
Oh, good
he
for
was,
him.
He was in the priest. He was the priest in Hot Fuzz. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
He like literally whips out twin derringers of Kimbo. He's like, oh, fuck off, Grasshopper.
Okay.
Yes.
I did just get the Cornetto trilogy on Blu-ray. I got to get back to that.
Yeah, Nick Frost blows him to fuck them. He's just a shotgun. Jesus Christ. Yeah, boy. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, so the thing that really makes me crack up about this is that, well, A, Saban was like legit upset about this, had it pulled from the internet, yet fan outrage demanded that they renew it, and so they let them put it back on. Here's the kicker, though.
Yeah.
Oh God, what is the actor's name?
Jason David Frank?
Thank you. The Green Ranger, Jason David Frank, actually did a video.
Came out from the shadows. And
came out from the shadows and said, this movie is fucking bullshit. Yeah. I mean, he was much nicer about it, but he was like, look.
He was more like, look, you know, Power Rangers is still a kid's thing. It's still, you know, on Nickelodeon right now. Kids still watch it, and I can kind of see where he's coming from, because it's like, you know, he's like, I don't want my daughter seeing this, and I can agree with him on that one.
You know, I can too, like, until you take into account the fact that now he makes his living kicking the shit out of people in Ultimate Fighting Championship.
I mean, that's different, man.
That's not different! He bashes the fuck out of people for a living.
Right.
Like, legit. Like, not like, ooh, I'm doing badly pantomimed karate. No, this is like, he's legit beating on people for a living. Like, isn't he fighting, like, one of those washed-up wrestlers soon?
What, CM Punk?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, that...
What, famous comic book creator CM Punk?
Wait, CM Punk is
writer
a
of
creator?
Thor?
I'm lost for words. I hope not.
Yeah, he's working for Marvel right now for whatever reason.
Oh, God. What is wrong with society?
I don't know!
What is wrong with you people? Jesus. Okay. Anyway. Next topic, because I don't want to talk about this no more.
Fine. All right.
Okay.
Who would have thought you would get so upset about talking about Power Rangers?
I know. Normally, if you had mentioned this to me like 6 months ago, I would have been like, fucking what? Power Rangers movie? Please.
I think you're more upset than I am.
Yeah, probably. No. But here's my... All right, so here's the next topic, which I'm actually more upset about this than I am about the Power Rangers film. Jeremy Clarkson got suspended from Top Gear.
Yeah, I heard about that. This is a very recent development. I think it just happened yesterday.
And
I this is the first I'd heard of it. Or of course, you mentioned to me in the lead up before we pressed record. I'm thinking to myself, man, Jeremy Clarkson has to be like the single most monopolistically successful television personality since Milton Berle.
Mm.
And I'm a 30-year-old making Milton Berle references. Yeah. Check me out.
Yeah.
Go you.
All right.
His episode of The Critic was fucking hysterical. Mm-hmm. Anyway, of course, all I could do is just languish and just try and think of what he could have done to get himself suspended from Top Gear. Like, did he endorse an electric car? Was he seen on a bicycle once?
Nope.
Like, what could he possibly do?
Apparently, the circumstances behind what actually happened at this point are still being investigated by the BBC, because it's up to the BBC as to whether or not Clarkson is going to be straight up fired from Top Gear.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they do that, that's probably the dumbest idea they could ever do.
Yeah. Especially since they're building a Top Gear / Doctor Who BBC theme park coming out soon. So,
I don't see James May carrying the whole show on his own.
Nor do I see Hammond doing it.
Me either.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I completely forgot about Hammond.
Well, that should tell you why he couldn't do it. All right, well, anyway.
This show does not run on Captain Slow.
Nope. Anyway, so apparently what happened was Clarkson was apparently got into a fist fight with one of the Top Gear producers. We don't know the circumstances of how it started.
But would you put it past him? Probably not.
No, this is a guy who got into a fist fight with, what's his name? That British judge on America's Got Talent.
Simon Cowell?
No. He's on the X Factor.
Oh.
What's his name?
I don't fucking know.
Some dude.
Some British dude.
Some British dude. There you go.
That narrows it down.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, so, like, Clarkson has not necessarily, within the last 5 or 6 years, been the most politically correct.
He's no angel. Let's just go ahead and put that on the map. But
no, and I'll agree that when I watch Top Gear, I don't watch Top Gear for Jeremy Clarkson's personal opinion on anything outside of the automobile world.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, quite frankly...
That's not why you're watching Top Gear.
No. Why would you watch Top Gear for that? If you want to watch that, watch, like, Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah.
Or, what's the other one? There's some British television show that he's on.
That narrows it down a bit.
Shut up.
Running joke. Anyways.
Anyway. But how this is messed up, though, is... that this Sunday's episode of Top Gear has been canceled.
Bullshit.
They're not showing it. Mm-hmm. And apparently, if they can't get this figured out in time, the last two seasons of the last two episodes of the season are going to get scrapped.
Double bullshit.
Which, that in itself is bad enough. However, it also puts the BBC up for like a multi-million dollar lawsuit, because multiple television organizations around the world show Top Gear.
Yeah.
And by them doing this and canceling the last three episodes of the season, that's a breach of contract for every single one of them, which opens them up to, like, being sued out the ass.
Yeah.
I feel like there has to be some sort of loophole in which they could just air syndicated old episodes.
I mean, who knows? Apparently it's their BBC is, like extremely concerned about this lawsuit, but apparently they're not backing down on doing this investigation. I mean... Now, interestingly enough, though, there was a, what is it? Here we go. There was an online petition, and I actually signed this not too long ago, about Clarkson being immediately reinstated. Mm-hmm. Now, this article from the BBC.com, which is what I've been referencing thus far, that had it at 250,000 signatures at the time of the writing of that article.
Uh-huh.
Now... I'm just gonna quickly pull it up. Let's see how many signatures it's gotten to this point.
Okay.
Because I know when I looked, it was somewhere significantly higher than that. But I want to make sure. Here we go.
417, please.
Here we are. So at the time in which the article was written, 250,000 signatures.
Yes.
I believe at the time I checked it, it was 400,000 signatures.
Okay.
This is currently now at 639,449 followers. And apparently this was... When was this?
I'm assuming that this is...
Trying to see recent. When this... this was started yesterday, okay. Apparently. So it's got over 500,000 followers since yesterday.
Okay.
And I just... I love the little gif of Clarkson clapping his hands like a fucking idiot. He's like,
500,000.
I mean, and Clarkson apparently is he's just trying to sit this one out. He's just like, he know he done fucked up.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know what? I'm not getting drawn out over this. I'm just going to let it blow over. But here's the interesting thing, right? So, like I said, I'm of the opinion, I enjoy Top Gear. I don't watch Top Gear for Jeremy Clarkson's personal opinion on his views in the world.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure a lot of South Park fans tell themselves that every time they sit down to watch South Park anymore.
Pretty much, right? But it's interesting because a mutual acquaintance of ours, won't say who, just for the point of anonymity, but posted this about 8 hours ago, okay?
Okay.
The statement is, Jeremy Clarkson is a dumbass. Whoever is on his side is just a biased fanboy who likes the repetitive room room show he's on.
So, not Zach, then?
Nope, it's okay. Not Zach.
No, it's definitely not Zach.
I know who it is!
Here's the interesting thing, is like, is this supposed to make us feel bad for liking the room room show? Because I don't feel bad.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, Jeremy Clarkson is an idiot. We know this. We just don't care.
It's been documented on the show plenty of times that he's an idiot.
Yeah, it's just, the thing is, we don't give a shit. We watch him because he's an idiot.
Yeah.
That's the point. The BBC, I thought, had grasped this concept and was letting it run. But apparently not. Okay, fine. So, yeah, so apparently, you know, there's a concern over the lawsuits that are being opened up, there's concern that Clarkson might actually be fired from the program.
Yeah.
Hopefully not. I would hope that people in the BBC are cognizant enough to realize that, okay, fine, slap him with a fine. Okay, so fine, suspend the last three episodes of the season, but to fire him from one of your most lucrative television shows on air right now?
Yeah.
Do you really think that's the wisest decision, or what's going to prevent him from signing a contract with another company and doing a show that's extremely similar to Top Gear just for another company?
I mean, you know, certainly I read one of the many reports since this
broke yesterday.
Whole thing broke, and there was you know, reports that he was already on very, very thin ice, and that if he messed up one more time, it was kind of like, you know, like a final warning that he was on with the BBC. So a lot of the people are speculating that, you know, hey, this might be the fall of Top Gear as we know it.
Okay, that's just stupid on their part.
Eh.
I mean, yes, I'll agree, he's not the most tactful human being.
No.
But then again, television does not thrive on people being tactful.
Eh. Hmm.
I know the internet sure doesn't.
I mean, entertainment kind of thrives on everybody being a bit of a dick.
A little bit.
I don't name me one selfless person on television. Go. Jordan, go.
The George Reeves Superman
wasn't on television. Those were films.
George Reeves was the television show, actually.
Really? I thought...
Christopher Reeve was the movie guy.
Really? I thought George Reeves was the 50s films.
He was the 50s TV show.
Oh.
There was a completely different guy.
So you probably mean, like, actual people, then. I don't know.
I mean, don't feel
certainly
bad.
Certainly nobody on TMZ.
All I know is that comedy... You know, comedy is... is tragedy plus time, but more immediately, comedy is also tragedy happening to other people.
Right. And so, I mean, I hope the BBC is actually not seriously considering firing Clarkson. I mean, sure, slap him with a fine, you know, suspend the last three episodes of the series, release him on DVD at a later date. But, I mean, come on. To effectively kill Top Gear over this is just kind of...
Yeah. And how is this fair to the other hosts?
It's not.
You know, it's...
Apparently they just don't care.
It's like,
because I think the BBC is perfectly cognizant knowing that if they fire Jeremy Clarkson, Top Gear is effectively over.
Yeah.
Which... And they lose that audience, which, again, is really kind of dumb on their part.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, here's...
But then again, they canceled Top Gear once before when Clarkson was a presenter, and then they brought him back about 5-6 years later, and the show went wildly popular. Mm-hmm. Who's to say in 5 or 6 years, if Clarkson is still alive, they won't bring him back? I don't know. Who knows? It's all a matter of timing. Timing! Anyway. So,
also what comedy is about.
Yes. So, I think I only got one more thing to talk about. We'll make it quick, just because we're running a little bit over. But we three saw Kingsman last week.
Yes. We three kings. Anyways.
No.
Sorry.
I know. It seemed like too good a joke to pass up, yeah. I assume. But we all saw Kingsman, and I mean, I fucking love that movie. That movie was by far and away my favorite movie of the year. Granted, it's only March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if memory, when was it released? Was it released in December?
It was released December. It was released Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
It's a reason
Samuel Jackson was named Valentine. That's all you can remember.
Ah, okay, all right, awesome. Well,
it was presented as it was presented as the 50 Shades killer.
Yes,
I personally.
Which, and God bless it too.
It did make money. I mean, I don't think it quite killed the opposition. But
well, the great thing is about it is that we first got turned on to this film because we interviewed Dave Gibbons mm-hmm. at Baltimore Comic Con last year.
Yep.
And Dave mentioned that this film was coming out and it was based directly on a comic book that he had worked on.
Mm-hmm. It was written by Mark Millar.
Yep.
Who also writer of Kick-Ass. Yep. So Matthew Vaughn is becoming that guy who takes Mark Millar's hideously cynical looks at comic books and pop culture and turns them into something just effortlessly crowd-pleasing.
And interestingly enough, it was the same company.
It's a good gig, I'd say.
Right. Well, it was the same film company, too. Marv did mm-hmm. Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2.
No, it's Matthew Vaughn's company.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Marv
is Matthew Arthur Robert Vaughn. That's what it stands for.
Nice. Okay. I didn't know that. Now I know. Mm-hmm. And knowing's half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Thank you. Anyway, I mean, I just want to say a couple things. I mean, Colin Firth, so good in that movie.
Yeah, you know, we used to think that Liam Neeson wasn't going to turn out to be that good of an action hero. You know?
Taken was awesome. Taken 2, 3, what was it?
Non-stop. Walk Among the Tombstones. The right. A-Team.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, seriously, how many times can you go back to the exact same well? Yeah, well, The Gray. The Gray was okay. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The Gray is not an action movie. Oh. It sure as hell looks like one from the trailers, but trust me, it's not.
Okay. Well, I didn't see it. So.
It's a sobering, pessimistic drama.
Yay.
Involving knife fights with wolves.
Yeah. Glass fists, right?
What?
Did he have a glass fist in that movie?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, I must be thinking of something else. Never mind, not important. Okay, but yeah, it seems like most of the films he's been doing thus far are basically just rehashes of Taken.
Mr. Darcy can wreck some fucking dudes.
I mean,
wow.
I saw the
Mr.
trailer.
Darcy wearing glasses.
here's the beauty of it. I saw the trailer, and I was immediately taken in, because I was just like, oh man, this movie, like, it's going to rock ultimate here. I mean, it's got like a bunch of kicking ass. It's got Samuel L. Jackson. And by the way, I'm sorry, but was anybody else getting a Truman Capote vibe from?
Okay, here's the thing about Samuel L. Jackson's character. So he's playing the villain. He's played villains before, but he was really stacking the deck into crafting a character that we can hate. So first and foremost about Richmond Valentine, the guy's name. So he's lisping and feminine, and faints at the sight of blood. Do we not like him enough yet? Well, he's also basically Steve Jobs in a pastel colored outfit, and don't hate him enough. Well, he wants to exterminate most of the world's population in order to ease off on global warming. Do we really hate this guy yet? No? Well, Yankees fan.
Yeah.
No way he lives! No way! Hold me back, guys!
Go Sox!
Yeah. No,
No. But yeah, it's like, I mean, there's so many good things. I mean, the soundtrack was kicking, the action was great, and
yeah.
Jordan, I want you to tell me the story about, you were telling me this story a few weeks ago. You mentioned that your brother and you were having a discussion about film.
Okay, fine. All right. So, I don't see eye to eye with my family very, very often. We're really, really different people. But I don't think I've had a conversation that more fully delineates the gulf, the divide between us when my brother and I were talking about movies, and he asked me to see American Sniper, and I haven't yet, and I honestly don't plan to really.
I don't blame you.
And then I said, well, you know, I think my circle and I are going to catch Kingsman. I've heard some reviews about it, very positive. Pretty much everybody keeps yammering on and on about the scene in which Colin Firth dismantles and like exterminates the entirety of the Westboro Baptist Church. And so, of course, my brother has to respond to that by saying, "Why? Why would anyone want to see that?"
I'm literally having to silence Brian. Mm-hmm. Visual reference in an audio podcast. It's just he obviously wants to tell you why,
so my brother and I are kind of different people, folks.
Yeah.
And
Jordan, what was the answer you gave him?
I told him that it's probably because all the filmmakers are British, and then he was placated by that. Like, yeah, they don't get us at all, do they?
Mm-mm. No. By the way, I will have to admit, that scene.
Oh, I loved that scene so much.
I mean, there's just so many things about that film. Like, there are plenty of, like, what the fuck moments.
Yeah.
That's definitely probably number one or number two.
That's one of my favorite recent action scenes in any movie. It was just so well shot. And it just, like, the choreography was amazing. In that scene.
I mean, yeah, you also have to like take into account, it's like, oh man, like, this whole plot centers around, like, Valentine's plan. Now, I'm not going to go into his evil plan, but
it's Moonraker, but subtract the laser guns and add cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, there you go. So, but the interesting thing about it is that they use this church as the sort of testing ground, and it ends up working better than they thought, and it just... Let's just say Mr. Darcy straight up fucking kills pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
I seem to remember someone reporting that Mr. Darcy racks up a higher body count in that one scene than Rambo gets in all of First Blood Part 2.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. That scene alone is just, I would say that scene alone is worth the price of admission, but the rest of the movie is fucking dynamite. Yeah. And interestingly enough, just a side note, Mark Hamill.
I didn't even recognize him, and he was doing the Joker voice.
Yeah,
it's just I guess that's just how much of a voice actor he is. I don't expect to see him in front of the camera anymore.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, that's the thing. It's he's not Luke Skywalker anymore. He's grizzled.
Oh.
He's...
Okay. Oh, I checked IMDb, and apparently they cast Mark Hamill as a difference to the source material. Because in the comic,
it is Mark Hamill.
It is Mark Valentine and his buddy Professor Arnold, who was Mark Hamill's character in the movie. Mm-hmm. But in the comic, Valentine and Professor Arnold go about recruiting a bunch of celebrities to save them from the coming Armageddon, and Mark Hamill is their first recruit.
Yep,
right on.
And mind you, the plot follows a similar vein to the film, there's definitely some changes there, but that's just to make the story move along. Yeah. Pardon me.
By the way, prequel and original Star Wars trilogy characters coming together. I mean, that's kind of neat. You had Mace Windu and Luke in the same scene. So.
Yeah.
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 How about and at one point, the hero saves a princess from a jail cell.
Yep.
And, okay, minor spoilers, but I did want to ask you something about this. Yeah, so the princess promises the hero anal sex if he saves the day, and he goes on to save the day, and then comes back to the jail cell. Was anyone else expecting him to open that cell door, and the princess like clocks him in the face with a bedpan and runs away?
I was honestly,
I would have kind of, I think I would have preferred it if that happened.
Yeah,
me too. I mean, the thing is like, I mean, that ending.
And then she found there's no place to go, so she has to hop on Mark Strong's plane to head home with
yeah,
with our hero. And
well, and that's the other thing. There were other people in those cells, so you would assume they'd have to spring everybody out of there. I mean, but I will admit,
Before listening to the things going on in that cell. Yeah, yeah.
But I will admit, I do like the thing that really sold me on this film was, and this is the fight scene, the first fight scene with Colin Firth like wrecking everybody in that bar.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the trailer. But still, when I saw that, I was like, oh, this movie is fucking awesome.
I remember, like, looking at you, like, halfway through the movie, like, we hadn't even reached, like, you know, act three yet. And I was just like,
we had just reached act two.
And I was just like, this movie is fucking awesome.
I know. I could not help myself. Like, I want to go see that movie again.
Me too.
It's like the first film in a long ass time where I've wanted to see it in theaters again before it goes out of theaters.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened in a while.
Michael Caine in this movie, you know, for God's sake, you know, like I like Michael Caine's character in this movie too. Like,
you know, okay, so okay.
Minor spoilers: Michael Caine is complicit in the plan to consign most of humanity to death, much like his role in Interstellar. What the hell's what a thing to get typecast as, Michael Caine?
Well, but here's the thing: you and I actually had this discussion as we were leaving the theater. Yeah, Michael Caine is complicit with Samuel L. Jackson's plot to take over the world. But that was the thing. Going into the film, I honestly thought it was Mark Strong's character that was going to fuck everybody.
Because
right?
Mark Strong is a good guy.
What? Yeah.
I can think of only one other movie in which that was true, and that was the one in which he played Sinestro.
And that was only the case until like the very last scene of the film.
Yeah.
And then he becomes evil because he took the fear ring.
Because yellow.
And there was no explicit reason why he took the fear ring.
Nope.
Yeah.
Just because he wanted it.
But
great, we're shitting on Green Lantern again. Awesome. I'm kidding.
But out of 5 stars, I could give it 6 stars because it gets my highest recommendation. It is, there's not a shot wasted. It's all beautiful.
I mean, like, there's so much more I want to talk about. And, like, I guess, like, when it comes out on DVD, I'd love to just maybe even just do a commentary or something on it because I love this movie so much. Like, I don't know why, but like just the one of the lines out of many in this film that's still ringing in my head is just, you know, is Michael Caine just looking at the main character after, you know, spoilers, but he just goes, "You little shit," and just like falls over dead.
And I appreciated the thick Cockney accent he adopted for that as well. Considering that he's supposed to be this prim and proper North Londoner aristocrat character.
Yeah. I don't know why, but that line, I was just like, rewind it, I want to see that again.
What movies did Colin Firth list off when he said, to the young hero, like, have you seen Pretty Woman? Have you seen... I don't think it's Harry Potter, but it's like, have you seen all those movies about diamond in the rough youths who are taken in and fashioned into a great hero, and then the kid says, "Oh, you mean like My Fair Lady?"
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so I'll take that.
Yeah, and he was like, Colin Firth was like, "Wait, what? You've seen that movie?
You see what?"
This is a very Gen Xer friendly kind of film.
Yeah. Mm. Also, does anyone else just love that kid's name? Eggsy.
Love it. Way to go, Eggsy.
What was his real name's like Harold or something, right?
No. Something like that.
I have no idea where Eggsy comes from.
I don't care. It's just, I love it.
It's got to be a British thing. I don't know.
Eggsy. Anyway,
before we put a nice little bow on this, like, one of the things I really liked about this movie was, you know, they even talk about it in the movie, and you could argue that maybe this, you know, maybe on a second watching, this might feel a little bit forced, and I hope it doesn't feel that way, but they're talking about, like, you know, like James Bond and whatnot and all this stuff, and it really dawned on me, like, you know, this movie really does feel like the new iteration of, like, what classic James Bond was. Because you look at, like, modern James Bond, and they, you know, stripped away so much of, you know, what was going on, Pierce Brosnan Bond.
Modern James Bond is just Jason Bourne.
Pretty much. So,
whereas in Kingsman, hey, check it out. Your shoes have little knives in them.
Yeah.
They used to have a phone. Because, right? Let's talk about Get Smart out of nowhere.
Well, no, also,
hello, Agent 99.
Because also in Dr. No, that was the introduction of the shoe that had the knife in it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the phone and the heel.
Like,
it was on Get Smart first, but the first Bond film had that.
It had a phone in the shoe? I didn't remember that.
I'm sorry, it had a transistor radio in the heel.
Okay.
I mean, am I wrong, but am I thinking, hey, you know, maybe we're starting to see, like, is this the beginning of, like, hey, we can start having this kind of stuff in spy movies again?
No, I think it was just the filmmakers taking the piss out of it.
I really hope not, because, like, it actually felt kind of cool to be like, oh, look, check this out. Like, here's a pin. And it's got this, like, you know, fast-acting poison. There you go. And it's like, what? Oh, cool. I haven't seen that in a movie in a while.
It's like, what's this? A cigarette lighter. He's like, what does it do? It's a grenade. Shut up. I will admit, that was pretty good.
Like, it was just so cool to see, like, that kind of stuff in a spy movie again.
I'll admit that... Well, here's the thing, though. There was nothing in the Kingsman arsenal that seemed too over the top.
Right. It wasn't...
How about you? Did you think anything was...
I could go for a watch that shoots trank darts.
I mean, you got a watch that shoots trank darts, you got a pen that has a fast-acting poison,
mm-hmm.
you got a cigarette lighter that's a grenade, for all intents and purposes, but I mean, that honestly is pretty sweet.
By the way, how cool was Valentine's assistant with the freaking, like, the sword legs?
The sword legs. Valentine has one henchwoman, but it's Gazelle, the one with sword legs. Yeah, it's
fucking badass.
Yeah, I think he should have a big burly guy too. But yeah, what do I know?
Well, that was the thing. Gazelle was actually a big burly black dude in the comic book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they just turned her into a sexy ethnic woman. I can't honestly pinpoint what she was.
Arabic?
I don't know. I just, it was cool. She had knife legs. She was fucking shit up. It was awesome. I will say this much. For anybody who's going to see this movie, wait until the scene with the implants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That scene in itself is I am
amazed that scene was not, like, sickeningly violent. And yet, instead, because, again, this is the kick-ass guy we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the human microwaves.
Yeah.
And yet, that scene, which... should have been, like, scanners times 1,000,
mm-hmm.
is instead, like, rapturously beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That I know. It was great. That's why I was like, okay, I'll take it. Because that's what I thought. I thought it was going to be a messy bloodbath, but it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great. All right. Well, honestly, we could heap hours of praise on the Kingsman, but quite frankly, we really need to cut it short because we are dangerously running over time
here. Yeah, there's one little thing I wanted to mention.
All right,
okay. So we talked about having a MAGFest retrospective.
Yes.
And, you know, chances are good we're probably not going to have a full-blown one. And admittedly, this year's MAGFest was kind of meh, in my opinion. We got skunked on interviews. I chased down so many interviews and have nothing to show for it. Also, the annual Channel Awesome bar trivia night. I got fifth. My team got fifth out of 29. I feel like such a loser. But anyway, it's
5 out of 29.
Okay, there's one thing I want to mention now. I could probably come up with other podcasts in the future to mention some other things. But one thing I want to mention now is that I went to a panel which was a celebration of Sega's advertising legacy. And man, like, you kind of forget just how much of an asshole most Sega commercials came off across. Like, there aren't that many there aren't that many ads right now that straight up call the competition a bunch of fuckheads.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sega does what Nintendo don't. And, you know, the Sega Saturn has, like, an extra bit than the plaything. Fly, plaything, fly. And then they throw it off a building and then shoot it with a shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, it's... They had a mock-up of Xbox 360 does what PlayStation shuns. not a real ad, but then they showed a bunch of Xbox 360 games, including Bayonetta and Pro Evolution Soccer, which, spoilers, are also on the PlayStation 3. PlayStation does not shun those titles, but anyway, no. What I'll always take away from this though is they showed a string of Japanese Saturn commercials.
Yes,
with the official mascot of the Sega Saturn in Japan only, a huge burly dude in a karate gi,
yes,
known as Segaton Sanchiro.
Segata Sanchiro.
How did I go this long without learning about this wonderful, wonderful man?
Oh my god.
This guy is like, imagine Chuck Norris.
Yes.
But Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And a mass murderer.
I'm sorry.
Like, they're...
Take one step back.
So they're... one commercial would be a bunch of kids coming out of school and walking down the street, and then Segaton Sanchiro, Segaton Sanchiro shows up and like pile drives all of their skulls into the pavement.
Yep.
And then like puts a Saturn on their corpses and walks away.
Yep.
Segaton Sanchiro.
Segaton Sanchiro.
And it's not all senseless slaughter. There's plenty of strictly purely awesome stuff too. Like, he's at a soccer match, or football, as I presume the Japanese call it, and the ball's flying in the air, so Segaton Sanchiro picks up a dude and hurls him like a javelin so that he headbutts the ball in midair and pounds it into the enemy's goal. Or sometimes Segaton Sanchiro is playing goalie, and the enemy team makes a shot on goal, and Segaton Sanchiro responds by suplexing his own goal out of the way of the ball's path.
Yes.
And then killing more children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. there are so many supercuts on YouTube of these commercials. Yeah. I could not recommend them more highly.
Yeah, like, but
with that much star power, how did the Saturn fail?
I mean,
I don't know.
It might be because they didn't have any Sonic games on it.
That could be an issue.
Other than Sonic R.
To anybody who's listening, I highly recommend looking for the final Segata Sanchiro commercial, which introduced the Dreamcast, because it's purely epic. It is so epic.
Well, we'll put up a link for those on on the description for this episode, but I think we've thoroughly gone over on our time. So
yeah.
You can find Brian Massey at bmassey1987 on Twitter. You can find Jordan at The Synapse. You can also find Jordan on his on his web series, which is called Geek Critique. That's C-R-I-T-E-E-K. When you see the K, you know it's him. Mm. And you can obviously find any of our Castwave shows at www.castwavestudios.com, or you can find it on our YouTube channel, which is Castwave Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Jordan and Brian,
yes,
I'm Colin Kakamas, and this is the podcast so popular, you have yet to hear of it. It's boldly going nowhere.
Bye. The podcast so popular, Colin routinely forgets the catchphrase.
Yeah. That should tell you something. Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.